step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
Craig rolls. Craig fires. End zone sounded too high for Jeremy Scott. It's another turnover on down.
Yowza, yowza, yowza. From the student section behind the goal line on Saturdays to the buzzer beaters of the madness in March, welcome to episode number 7 of Bowl Games and Brackets. I am Joe, and I am joined by my compadre Darren. And we are here to take you through the world of college football and basketball. From the rivalries and underdogs to the legendary performances, we will be your guide. From your dorm to the tailgate, we have you covered each and every week. Sit back, relax, and enjoy. And Darren, let's recap week 0.
For the last time. I can't believe we still have a week 0. I can't believe it. It's just, it's ridiculous.
Well,
it's week 1. There's no week 0.
Well, Friday, the NCAA, in their greatness, they don't have enough problems, decided that effective next year, the calendar will change, and this week will officially be week 1. And week 1 will start the weekend before Thanksgiving. So the weekend before Labor Day, it's going to go the Thursday of the week before Labor Day all the way through. The NCAA season will end the Saturday after Thanksgiving. So this will officially be week 1 next year.
It's week 1 until – so this will be week 1 and it'll go all the way to Army-Navy. Is that what we're saying?
No, they're actually stopping at Thanksgiving weekend.
Oh, so the Army-Navy is going to be in December. So, yeah, absolutely. So
Army-Navy will still happen in December, but because I guess technically they don't expect them to play for a conference –
It's a non-conference game anyway.
Yes. So it's their game there. So, but then that's what the season's going to do. So there'll be no more week 0. So this will be the final, our first and only week 0 recap.
Dumbest thing ever. But anyway, you know, listen, and the season got off. And Joe, you called it on our previous program saying that these games in Ireland are always close. And it was close again, Joe.
Sure enough. I didn't have the safety, though. I didn't see the safety coming.
Who did?
But 15-10, nice low-scoring game in Dublin in the rain.
Yep.
That game, the rain was picking up. It was a typical Ireland summer in on our side type of game. And Bill Belichick in North Carolina get off to a 1-0 start.
I mean, this was an interesting game. I mean, it's not like they did a lot in this game offensively either side. TCU scored 10 points in their first two possessions, didn't score again.
No,
Billy Edwards wasn't what you would call great, but he wasn't bad. He's 16 for 28 for 232. They lost two fumbles, missed a field goal, but it was still enough to win the game.
Yes. I mean, they had their he did find Jordan Shipp 5 times for 71 yards. And then he had Jelani Thurman caught 4 passes for 94 yards. And then he had his three-headed monster at running back. They didn't kill them. They only rushed for 90 yards. But if you think about it, last year they only rushed for 50 in the same game, in a home game. So they did improve in running the ball. Jalen McGill had their only touchdown on a scamper. Their defense, though, played well. You want to talk more about the offense?
No. Go right into it. Talk about
it. Going to the defense. I mean, the guy who had a great game yesterday was Xavier Lewis. He had 4.5 tackles for loss. He had 11 tackles overall. He had 2 sacks. And then Melkart Abu-Jabade there, he had a sack, and he had a big sack at that because that led to the field goal that gave him their last set of points. So their defense brought it. I mean, I will say this. TCU ran for 100-plus yards in the first half of the game. But then in the second half, they were locked and loaded, and they were driving them inside, and the defense was wrapping them up. So the defense really turned it on in the second half.
Yeah, this game was decided 3 points on this game. The poor snap for the safety when it was 10-10, that 12-10 game made it a little bit interesting because, you know, rather than being tied, you're down going into the half.
Yep.
Three penalties on Carolina for 20 yards, 11 penalties on TCU for 100 yards. And then on fourth down, North Carolina 1-for-1, TCU 1-for-5, including twice deep in Tar Heelville late in the game, both in the fourth quarter where they got big stops. And it just seemed as though, you know, TCU was able to move the ball a little bit when they needed to in those last couple of drives. But then, you know, North Carolina kept bending but not breaking. And you say to yourself, and listen, I understood why you go for it. But, you know, field goals don't suck. And everybody acts like kicking a field goal is devastating with, like, you know, 6, 7, 8 minutes to go in a game. And if you kick a field goal that cuts it to a 2-point game, I don't understand where it hurts you. A field goal wins then. And yet every coach seems to – they go by these metrics, which are just garbage because you got a bunch of nerds in a room that are sitting there calculating stats based on situations, but they don't have the feel of the game that goes along with it, Joe. And it really drives me nuts.
And I agree with you on that point, because if you look at that game, it wasn't like Carolina was going to march right back down the field and put up a touchdown. So it wasn't like you were going up against a Tom Brady or Peyton Manning type of offense on the other end that was going to come right down and march right down the field. So you knew you had a chance, and when you go back, and I know it's always Tuesday morning quarterbacking, or in this case Sunday night quarterbacking, but TCU, they kicked the field goal the first time on the fourth down. They would have gotten the ball back. They would have been down there a second time. They probably win the game 16-15.
Or at least force Carolina to win, hit the game winning field goal at the end with a little bit more pressure, and the kicker had missed his last kick.
Yes.
Well, that's right. So, he missed the 48
in between. So yeah, that puts a different type of pressure back on Carolina, which they didn't have. And then Carolina ran out the last 4-plus minutes of the game.
Did a great job running it out. Carolina earned the victory. It was a close game. I mean, it wasn't like one side was vastly superior to the other. But, you know, it doesn't matter how close the game is. One team gets the W, the other one gets the L. And no, Carolina and Bill Belichick at 74 years old looks like he, finds the fountain of youth a little bit. Now, again, only time will tell how good this Carolina team and how good that TCU team is. Yep. And, we'll see if this game means something, you know, bowl-wise or anything like that, where North Carolina gets themselves back bowling this year, or if this is a game that affects TCU's opportunity to get into a bowl game.
No, true. But now, I was going to say, one game that was a blowout that became close was the USC game. They took
Ryan was fantastic, Joe.
Wait, he was phenomenal. 25 for 29 for 289 and 2 touchdowns?
And he rushed for 1, too.
Yep. And King Miller had 63 yards on the ground and a touchdown. And then they had 164 yards rushing USC, 340 passing. They outplayed. I mean, we talked about it in a previous show. They were all over San Jose State. They really didn't give them a chance to breathe. And then they put in their backups in the fourth quarter. And if you had USC minus 38.5, you found out that they were going to give up 3 touchdowns at the end of the game and let them right back in it. So if they left their starters in the whole game, they might have kept them to under 10 points, but they ended up giving up 3 touchdowns late in that game. But USC came out, Lincoln Riley, they set the tone. Now, obviously, it's San Jose State. It's not a Big Ten opponent right away, but it's they had a good showing, and they were playing on both sides of the ball very, very well.
Yeah, the defense came out fired up, and that was very interesting.
Gary Patterson.
Yeah,
Gary
absolutely. Patterson.
Yeah.
He knows what he's doing. And, again, 35-3 after three, and then, you know, it ends 42-26. So, you know, I mean, they weren't covering after three, but they were close. And then in the fourth quarter, you know, San Jose State puts up a few points and makes it look respectable for themselves.
No, that's it. That's it.
Then you get Virginia versus NC State in the conference matchup.
Yes, this year was a conference game.
This was a one-sided affair. I mean, listen, I'm very bullish on Virginia, as you know. Bolt Brubula came out 9-for-11, 155, two touchdowns. He rushed for 115 yards, a career high. For the game, Virginia rushed for 258 yards. They have four different running backs that they rotate. You know, it's a real good team. They forced two turnovers. They held NC State to 168 total yards and 10 first downs. They really kind of held C.J. Bailey in check. But here's the thing. The Virginia offensive line, 2 7-year players, 2 6-year players, and a 5th-year player. So you want to have experience on there, and that's what they have. But again, like I said, the defense was great too. C.J. Bailey held the 84 yards and a pick for the game for the Wolfpack. Virginia just ran it down their throat. Just a much better team. NC State showed a little bit of a sign here and there, maybe cutting.
Oh my God, barely.
Second, and barely. And then you know what? Virginia just laid it on them. They ran it right down their throats. Virginia was the far superior team in this one. And you know, listen. There was one of those teams I was bullish on that did well. There was another team I'm bullish on that didn't do well. So the Virginia was the one that I liked.
Well, you know, it was interesting. But, I mean, Bob Prabilla, they just came out and they just did not let up at all, Virginia.
Well, and they struggle against NC State. So it's important for them to get that win. They struggled against this team.
It was. They were talking about it during the game as well. And, you know, but for them to get that win and get off to a good start, it could be a good time for Virginia this year. Maybe you were right.
We're going to find out, bud. We're going to find out.
That's it. Now, I don't know which way you want to go next, but I was thinking of, the New Mexico State Florida State game.
Go for it, Joe.
We had a chance to see Ashton Daniels and you know, Florida State came out, Mike Norvell. Now, should have been a they let him hang around a lot. They didn't blow the doors off of New Mexico State, but they let him hang around just enough that they were in the game. You know, they got off to a quick 10-point lead. Then they let him back in 10-7. You know, Daniels had a run. And then from there, you know, they got 17-7, 17-10. They just could not. They did put him away to win the game 34-17, but it just seems like New Mexico State was hanging around. So Daniels did have a good game. I will say this. You know, he ended up throwing for 200 yards. He was 17-27, not the greatest performance, one touchdown and one interception. You know, Cromer ran for 115 yards, and he had a TD. And Samuel Singleton had one score, as well as catching 54 passes and scoring a touchdown receiving too. So Singleton was really him and Daniels together had a good game, but the defense wasn't lights out for Florida State, and we look ahead to the and that's something that's important. I mean, they had three sacks, nothing over the top. They really they let him hang around a lot. So I expected more out of Florida State last night. I expected, you know, to cover a 38.5 point spread and stuff like that, 30.5 point spread, I would have thought, against New Mexico State. But they just could not get it all.
This is not, you know, your big brother's Florida State team. This team, after Norvell's one good year, they have fallen on hard times. And you'll be hard-pressed to see him back here next year. Just based on this game, you know this team isn't up to the standard of what you're looking for from Florida State. Florida State should be much better. I'm going to go to Stanford. Stanford, Hawaii. This game ended up being a game, Joe. Stanford led 23-7 going into the fourth, and then Hawaii got things going, all right? Timmy Chang's boys, three straight drives, 16 plays, 66 yards, then six plays, 53 yards, then nine plays, 90 yards, and suddenly Hawaii's up 27-23. Stanford answers. Seven-play, 62-yard drive capped by Micah Forts, two-yard touchdown rush. His third touchdown of the game. They go up 30-27. Five plays later, Hawaii quarterback Micah Alahato fumbled, forced by Byrol, and picked up by Tafiti, and the game ends 37-27. So Stanford gets this cover. They were up comfortably. Then all of a sudden, they allowed Hawaii to storm back, just like last year, by the way. And then they pulled away late. Davis Warren was okay. 2-for-3, 10 in the score for Stanford. Ford had 99 yards rushing with his three touchdowns. Stanford gets the first win in the Tavita Pritchard era. And they're off and running. So we'll see what happens with this Stanford team. Again, Hawaii gave them a little bit more than they should have. Down 23-7, an ACC squad should not be struggling against a Mountain West squad up 23-7. That's what happened here, especially at home. So we're going to see how good Stanford's team really is. But they can run the ball. Davis Warren looked okay. Now we're going to see how they do against a better competition going forward, Joe.
No, and that's for sure. And, it's interesting, but is Stanford really an ACC team?
That's what they're listed. If you want to call them a Pac-12 team still.
I know.
Pac-12 shouldn't struggle with the Mountain West like that at home.
That's true. Yeah, but, Hawaii, it is Hawaii, and they, Timmy Chang, from his time at quarterback there, just gunslinger.
So
they're never out of a game. Hawaii's never out. Never out of a game.
Any other games you want to touch on?
I guess the other one would be, which I happened to have, was the Memphis UNLV game.
I was wrong.
That turned out to be a real interesting affair because UNLV got up big time.
They jumped out on him, but Memphis scored the last 13 points in this game.
Yes. So what I was going to say, and I just got discombobulated on because I'm looking at something else that I shouldn't be looking at. So Marcus Stokes had a great game, 223 yards, two touchdowns. Jalen Carter ran for just short of 100 yards, and he had a TD. Jackson Arnold, phenomenal for UNLV, threw for 291 yards, 25-for-37, because he had to throw it at the end of the game to try to get him back in there. And he also ran for 54 yards and a touchdown. But like you said, 14-7 lead, and then they take a 21-14 lead going into the towards the end of the third quarter, and then boom, last three scores, touchdown and two field goals for Memphis put them away. So
I mean, you're right.
They looked good. The UNLV looked good at the beginning of the game, but then they just could not. Memphis hung around, and boom, that was it. That's what they needed.
Yeah, Charles Huff gets his win in his debut at Memphis.
He's the first road coach in Memphis history to win their road debut.
No, and it was good. And they only had the ball 25 minutes. UNLV controlled the ball 35 minutes in this game. But where I want to go to is Jackson Arnold here, okay? Because he played well, like you said.
Yeah.
25-for-37, 291, two scores, rush for another score, 54 yards rushing. Great. But there's something missing here. This team puts up 460 total yards of offense and scores 21 points. There was something missing at Oklahoma. There was something missing at Auburn. And so far in week one, there's something missing here. Now you just don't know if there's something about Jackson Arnold that's not going to be able to get his teams across the finish line. Because he struggled at Oklahoma. He struggled at Auburn. And now UNLV in a home game, a home opener, the crowd's all pumped up. This is a team people have high aspirations for. Now you come back and you start saying to yourself, is the Mountain West going to be worse than we think?
Well,
is the Mountain West going to struggle? Because this is one of those top two or three teams in the Mountain West here. And they lose a home game. It gets a good Memphis team. But Memphis is playing basically 11 transfers out there. They don't have any of their old players. So they're regrouping completely. I mean, UNLV has a lot of transfers too. But, on the road, you don't expect them to put it together. And then you have the lead. You're playing well. But you put up 460 yards. 21 points is not enough points when you put up 460 yards, Joe.
No.
Stopped on downs three times.
That is for certain. Putting up that much is not that good.
Especially with no turnovers. I mean, they were stopped on downs three times, but they did not turn the ball over in this game.
No, not at all. Which wasn't good at all. There was something I had to look. I had a note that I've written down about this game, and Of course, you know, if I needed it, I wouldn't find it. No, oh, no.
Yes.
You know, Charles Hook, this is basically a Southern Miss team.
Yeah.
So basically Southern Miss went in and beat UNLV in a home game.
Yeah.
They're going to say it was at Allegiant Field, but it was a home game. And, you know, it's amazing. And that's the continuity of these guys playing together. You know, the Southern Miss guys had played together and they had played for Huff before. So they knew what their coach expected. Their coach knew what they could do. So that makes a big difference in these games. But Jackson Arnold, if you look at it, he rushed the ball.
Like 2 yards a pop. He didn't do much. Yeah. 21 for 54, yeah. I think.
No,
like that.
But he rushed the ball 21 times and he threw 37 pass attempts, right? So yes. That's 58 times that he was in control of the ball. And I think they ran 80-something offensive plays. So when you think about it, the whole offense was him. Could the problem be that he needs a number two or a number three to help him?
Well, I mean, the reality is that they have to run the ball. I mean, Dan Mullen is a running coach. He's never been an air coach. He's been a guy that relied on running. I mean, listen, they threw it Mississippi State when he was there a little bit, and they threw it Florida when he was there a little bit. But this is a team that's supposed to be physical defensively, and you expect Dan Mullen teams to be able to hold on to leads in the fourth quarter, and in the second half at least anyway, and that didn't happen here.
No,
you're right. They're gonna have to find somebody else to help with that ground game. It can't be all Jackson Arnold.
And the funny part was he said that he was gonna play both quarterbacks and he only played Jackson Arnold. And the Memphis coach waited to the last second to announce that Marcus Stokes was gonna be the starter and he didn't play his other quarterback. So it's kinda Aaron Nolan. So it's kind of funny that both guys, it sounded like they were both gonna go between both quarterbacks, they each stuck to one the whole game.
Yeah, you know, a little gamesmanship, Joe. A little gamesmanship.
Yes. But you know what? It was a good game, and it was probably one of the best games of the day.
Yeah, no, it was very competitive all the way through. Actually, you know, listen, you can say what you want about TCU North Carolina. It wasn't a high-scoring game, but it was competitive.
Yes.
You could say Stanford Hawaii became competitive late. Hawaii actually took the lead. And Memphis and Vegas, UNLV, were pretty much an even matchup here throughout. So anything could have happened here.
Was there anything else that you looked at from yesterday that you want to talk about?
Just a couple of real quick things. North Dakota State rolled past Jacksonville State. This game was 10-7. And the Bison, there's a sack. Jacksonville State, the Gamecocks get a sack late in the second quarter. Bison get back up to the line. They throw a bomb. The safety tries to undercut and get a pick. It goes over his hands for a touchdown, 17-7. Bison don't look back. They win their first game in the FBS. So that's big for them. And then the other one was, again, not a big game, but Eastern Michigan beat Sac State. This is Sac State's entry into the MAC. It was also 500th win ever for Eastern Michigan. The Eagles get that little nod. The Hornets, welcome to the MAC with a beatdown. I know 28-17 doesn't look that bad, but to be honest with you, they scored. They had 100 yards on their last drive for the game. You know, they had 271. So they were held in check. Noah came through for 279 and two scores. But, you know, so there wasn't a lot of Division I action yesterday, let's be honest, or this weekend. But next week we start really kicking it off with some big games, and we'll be back Thursday to talk about those.
Yep.
I'm sorry.
What were you going to say?
Just a couple other little quick highlights. Well, not highlights, lowlights, unfortunately.
Yeah.
William Jewell, college football player, Michael Joe Barnett, had died, the school announced Saturday. He was 20 years old. He had just rushed for a touchdown, went to the sideline, and there was a medical emergency. The game was suspended. They haven't given us a cause of death yet, but obviously a shame when a young man like that who played at Liberty North High School in that area and then went to William Jewell, which is right in Liberty, Missouri, passed away. And just a sad moment for college football. It's not something we see very often or if hardly ever.
Ever.
And just unfortunately, one of those things that, I guess part of the physicality of the game. I don't know what happened. He had just scored. So it was like a high euphoric thing. And then all of a sudden, he had a medical emergency, game suspended, and then, of course, unfortunately, he perished at the age of 20 years old. The other one, which is a real low light, unfortunately, in a different way, was TCU safety Jacob Fields, who was dismissed from the team on August 18th following a locker room altercation when he punched his teammate. He was arrested Sunday on the charge of aggravated assault, causing serious bodily injury. He transferred there from La Tech. He's accused of punching Horned Frogs wide receiver Dozy Ezukanma in the locker room on August 13th. TCU's general manager reported the incident to the police the next day. So Jacob Fields now is being charged, but more importantly, unfortunately, Micah Joe Barnett, you know, keep his family in your prayers, passes away at the age of 20 years old. Was there anything else you wanted to touch on, Joe, before we wrap up episode seven?
Episode seven, week zero for the final time. we'll see what plays out from Monday to Thursday in the courts. If there's any more back and forth with, the stuff that we're hearing about judges signing on to let players play for LSU or not play for LSU. And, we'll have another update on Thursday.
Yep, we will. We certainly will. So we're going to wrap this one up here. Listen, thank you for listening to Bowl Games and Brackets. Here's episode seven. College football is so much more than just wins and losses. There are rivalries, traditions, upsets, heartbreaks, and those unforgettable moments that bring us all together. And when the leaves start to fall, Joe, the stakes get higher. And every Saturday feels like it could change everything. So till next time, keep watching, keep debating, keep believing in your team, and most importantly, keep your brackets sharp and your bowl dreams alive.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.